into the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, the two different ways of reaching the spiritual sky and thereby getting emancipation from all material bondage, namely, either the direct process of reaching the kingdom of God or the gradual process through the other higher planets of the universe, are set forth exactly according to the version of the Vedas. The Vedic version in this connection are Jada Sarbe Paramuchyante Kamo Jesa Ridhi Sritaha Atho Mrittor Mrito Atho Morto Amrito Bhavati Atra Brahma Samasnute Brihat Aranyak Upanishad 447 and Te Archir Abhishamban Bhanti Brihat Aranyak Upanishad 6215. Those who are free from all material desires, which are diseases of the heart, are able to conquer death and enter the kingdom of God through the Archi planets. These Vedic versions corroborate the versions of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and the latter is further confirmed by Shukadev Goswami, who affirms that the truth was disclosed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Lord Sri Krishna, Vasudeva, to Brahma, the first authority on the Vedas. The disciplic succession holds that the Vedas are uttered by Lord Krishna to Brahma, by Brahma to Narad, and by Narad to Vasudev, and then by Vasudev to Shukadev Goswami, and so on. So there is no difference between the versions of all the authorities. The truth is eternal, and as such, there cannot be any new opinion about the truth. That is the way of knowing the knowledge contained in the Vedas. It is not a thing to be understood by one's erudite scholarship or by the fashionable interpretations of mundane scholars. There is nothing to be added and nothing to be subtracted, because the truth is the truth. One has to accept, after all, some authority. The modern scientists are also authorities for the common man for some scientific truths. The common man follows the version of the scientists. This means that the common man follows the authority. The Vedic knowledge is also received in that way. The common man cannot argue about what is beyond the sky or beyond the universe. He must accept the versions of the Vedas as they are understood by the authorized disciplic succession. In the Bhagavad Gita also, the same process of understanding the Gita is stated in the fourth chapter. If one does not follow the authoritative versions of the Acharyas, he will vainly search after the truth mentioned in the Vedas. Your Majesty Maharaj Parikshit, know that all that I have described in reply to your proper inquiry is just according to the version of the Vedas, and it is eternal truth. This was described personally by Lord Krishna unto Brahma, with whom the Lord was satisfied upon being properly worshipped. So, it's a very important shloka and a wonderful purport given by Srila Prabhupada. So, here, Prabhupada actually in the purport dealt with three different aspects. The first one is that the way to go back to Godhead by becoming free from the material bondage has been described in the Vedas, and if one wants to go back, then he has to follow that process. One cannot concoct certain ideas on his own and claim that he is going to go back by following that process. There is no way of speculating in that matter. One may speculate on that subject and may get some worship from some fools, but that will not help anyone. Actually, the way to go back to Godhead is a very, very specific and precise way. And that way has been described in the Vedas, and besides that, there is no other way. That's the first aspect. Then Prabhupada is pointing out that the Vedas are actually, the Vedic knowledge is coming down in the disciplic succession. The knowledge was first given by Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to Brahma. Then Brahma gave it to Narad, and Narad gave it to Vasudev, and Vasudev gave it to Sukadev Goswami, and this is how the Vedic knowledge is coming down. So, that's the second aspect, that unless and until we follow a disciplic succession, we cannot properly understand the Vedic purpose, the meaning of the Vedic knowledge. And the third thing is that one has to follow a spiritual master or an authority. Even in the material platform, we see that for any kind of knowledge, one has to accept an authority. Can people speculate on how one goes to moon? No. One has to understand the process of going to moon, the theory of going to moon, from some scientist. And the scientist explain or bluff. That's of course yet to be seen. Like most cases, scientists actually do not explain, they simply bluff people. But people buy those bluffs. People accept the bluff. A scientist comes and gives a big TV program and gives a lot of bluff, and people think, oh, what a wonderful knowledge. And the more they follow the scientists, where do they go? Do they go to moon? No, they go to hell. So that is the difference. But even in the mundane platform, we can see that the people are following some authority or the other. Like if we want to know something, then we have to go to somebody who knows. So these are the three aspects that has been dealt with in the purport. So briefly I will discuss all these three aspects. The first one is that the way to go back to Godhead is by following the Vedas. The process has been described in the Vedas. Now that can be very easily understood, that the Vedas actually have been designed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead for our spiritual upliftment. Vedas do not have any other objective. Sometimes it may seem that the Vedas are leading us for material enjoyment, because Vedas act, a part of the section of the Vedas do deal with that subject matter, and that is how one can enjoy the material nature. And Vedas are giving the directions. If you want to become very rich, you can act like this. You can, if you want to be very famous, you can act like that. And this way the Vedas are giving the prescriptions how we can enjoy the material nature. But the goal is not to... But the goal is not to enjoy the material nature, but to be situated in the spiritual nature. And a common man is very interested in material enjoyment. A man in the initial stage is in his bodily platform. Then when he makes advancement, then he comes to his intellectual platform. And then when he makes even further advancement, then in what platform he becomes situated? Who will say that? When one transcends the intellectual platform, then in what platform does he come to? Hridaya Govinda? He comes to the spiritual platform, right? Like in the beginning, we all are in the bodily platform. In the beginning, we all think that we are this body, right? Especially with the animals, we can see that. The animals do not have any concept that they have a mind or they have an intellectual platform. They are simply into acting on the bodily platform. Like we can see the man, the animal-like men also behave like that. They are simply, their only pleasure is pertaining to the body. Their only pleasure is their physical enjoyment. That is eating, sleeping, mating and defending. Right? And when one transcends the bodily platform, then where he is situated? He is situated on the intellectual platform. Right? So the people, those who are situated in the bodily platform, for them to transcend the bodily platform and come to the intellectual platform, the Vedas have given a prescription. The way a doctor writes a prescription and gives a medicine, the same way the Vedas are giving the medicines. That how one can transcend the platform of eating and sleeping and mating and defending. And then when one transcends the platform, transcending, does what does transcending mean? Transcending means going above, right? Not going below. The Vedas are giving those prescriptions in order to transcend the animal platform and come to the higher platform. Right. But some people, where those who indulge in those activities, like Vedas are actually giving the knowledge about how to eat, how to sleep, how to mate, and how to defend. But some fools, they simply take those knowledge of the Vedas in order to indulge in these animal activities. And instead of transcending, they go below. Like instead of coming out of the animal platform, they get into more and more gross animalistic platform. So that they do not understand. And often I notice that some scholars of the Vedas make the same mistake. They say, oh, Vedas are giving the directions, Vedas are talking about eating and sleeping and mating and defending. So why shouldn't we do that? But the thing is that Vedas are giving those directions not to indulge in those activities, but to transcend those activities. Anyway, fools will always remain fools, especially when they are so adamant to remain fools. And there is no dearth of such fools in the world. They have been described in the Bhagavad Gita as mayaya aporhito jnana. Their knowledge has been stolen by maya. Apparently this seems that they are very wise. They have a lot of knowledge. They can quote the scriptures very nicely. They know many, many shlokas. But actual understanding, the actual knowledge has been stolen by maya. Anyway, but the ones who are situated in the real knowledge, they know that the instructions that has been given in the Vedas, in the karma, this section of the Vedas is called Karma Kanda section, that is dealing with the bodily platform. So the instructions in the Karma Kanda is actually meant for transcending the Karma Kanda platform or bodily platform and come to the intellectual platform. And that intellectual platform, the instructions for the people, those who are situated in the intellectual platform, has been given in the Vedas in the Jnana Kanda section. And then when one transcends the intellectual platform and is situated on the spiritual platform, then the Vedas are giving them further instructions to them, and those instructions are in the Upasana Kanda section. So this way the Vedas have been divided into three different sections: Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, and Upasana Kanda. So the goal of the Vedas is to bring everyone into the Upasana Kanda platform, into the spiritual platform, and give them the direction how to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vedaishya sarvai rahameva veddo. Krishna is telling that he is the central figure of the Vedas. All the Vedas are actually revealing the identity of Krishna. Ahameva veddo. Veddo means to know. And aham means I. Krishna is telling that in all the Vedas, Vedaishya sarvai, in all the Vedas, I alone am to be known. So in all the Vedas, it's only Krishna that is to be known. Everyone approaches Vedas to know Krishna. And when one gets to know Krishna, then what he is supposed to do? He is supposed to render service unto him with love and devotion. So this way we can see that all the Vedas are guiding people to become devotees of Krishna. And that is the goal. And unless and until one becomes a devotee of Krishna, one cannot go back to Godhead. It is impossible. Now one may question that there are so many scriptures in the world, and all the scriptures have been mentioned to be eternal. Then why are you claiming that only the Vedas are eternal, not others? Now that, of course, we do not say it so boldly or so specifically, but actually we do mean it. Actually, that's why we follow the Vedas. Like the other day somebody asked me whether I believe in Jesus Christ. And I said, yes, I do. Actually I was dressed up as a Karmi. I was traveling, and in the plains in Europe, especially for the border, emigration, I sometimes wear Karmi clothes. And a person who was sitting next to me, he was asking who I was, and I told him that I am actually a spiritualist. And he was asking what I was chanting, and he asked what I was doing. I told him that I was chanting the name of the Lord, and this bead is like the rosary. And so he asked whether I was a Christian. So I said, it depends what you mean by a Christian. Like if you mean that to be a Christian means to follow the instructions of Jesus Christ, yes, I am a Christian. But if you ask me whether I go to the church, then I will say that I don't go to the church. I don't belong to any Christian church, but I do follow Jesus Christ. So, when you take the essence, then we see that what Jesus gave and what we are following, there is no difference. Because Jesus is also talking about how to love God. But how it is being practiced today in the church is quite different from what it should actually have been like. There's a big difference between Jesus' instructions and the way it is being practiced in the church today. So, and same thing is with their scripture. Like, the way it has been presented is not bona fide, because it is not, first of all, Bible was not written by Jesus Christ. It was written much later by the people, those who had very little contact with Jesus Christ. They didn't have any connection whatsoever, because there was no guru parampara, no disciplic succession to follow the instructions, to continue the instructions. It was just, and later on when it was formulated by the kings, it was just a political convenience. The Bibles were written by the kings of Europe so that they could dominate over their people. Like church and the nobility, church and the rulers got together and began to exploit people. So that's why the Bible that we see today is totally, not totally, but to a great extent, it is unbona fide. The people much later described about Jesus Christ. Like the people, especially those who began to write the Bible, they came much, much later, and they didn't have any connection. And anyway, so but we have, our scripture is not like that. Our scriptures were given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself to the first devotee, the first created being on this planet, Lord Brahma. And then Brahma gave it to his son, Narad. Then Narad gave it to his bona fide disciple, Vasudev. So this is how it is coming down without any deviation. And whenever there is a deviation, there is a distortion. We do not say that the scriptures haven't been distorted. The scriptures have been distorted by people. But whenever it is distorted, we do not reject, we do not accept it. we immediately reject it, and that is what makes our sampradaya bona fide. If that's why we had so much struggle actually in the past. Like there was a time when many people in Bengal were, and also in Vrindavan, they were claiming that they are the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But they were not actually following the instructions of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as it was, as it is. Same thing with Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna also told in Bhagavad Gita. Krishna also told in Bhagavad Gita that evam parampara praptam imam rajarshayo vidu shakaleneha mahota yoga nashta parantapa. This is how the disciplic succession was flowing, but unfortunately at certain point of time the succession, the chain of succession was broken, and that's how the knowledge was polluted. And same thing with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's followers, as I was saying, that they were claiming that they were Mahaprabhu's followers, but they were not actually accepting the scriptures as it is. Instructions were not practiced as Mahaprabhu wanted them to be practiced. Mahaprabhu was a very, very strict person as far as following the rules and regulations were concerned. But these people in the name of Mahaprabhu started doing all kinds of nonsense. They started to indulge in taking intoxication, they started indulging in eating fish, and they started to indulge in illicit sex. So although they were claiming that they were followers of Mahaprabhu, but since they did not practice Mahaprabhu's instructions, they became nonsense. They became totally ashar, useless. So then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came and he revived Mahaprabhu's culture. Bhakti Vinod Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur after him. Like they presented the real teachings of Lord Chaitanya and said, and that's why it is very important that we maintain these principles, these four regulative principles. That is actually the very, very essence of our movement. And deviation actually comes because of these sinful activities. When one does not follow these four regulative principles, then only the deviation comes. If one is following the regulative principles, then he cannot possibly deviate if he has been initiated by a bona fide spiritual master. That's why it's very important. Like we can see that if Prabhupada gave us instructions that how we should follow, and if we maintain the instructions of following these four regulative principles, then there is no chance of our deviating from that point. If we do not take intoxication, then we do not have to, or if we do not indulge in these four sinful activities, then there is no question of distorting Prabhupada's teachings. The problem actually begins when we try to justify our wrongdoing in the name of Prabhupada's teaching. If somebody says, if somebody indulges in illicit sex, and if he tries to justify that it is alright to have illicit sex, then can he possibly follow Prabhupada's instructions as Prabhupada gave in the books? No. On the other hand, he will distort Prabhupada's instructions and try to justify that what he is doing is right. And that is how the problem begins. So that's why Prabhupada was very strict about following the four regulative principles. Prabhupada's instructions are actually very simple. Prabhupada says follow the four regulative principles and chant minimum 16 rounds every day, and I guarantee you will go back to Godhead. I mean, such a clear-cut instruction. Now one may say, well, how going back to Godhead be so easy? Just have to follow the four regulative principles and chant 16 rounds. But yes, if one does that, then it is guaranteed that he will go back to Godhead. Because if one does that, then he will also follow the other instructions that's been given by Prabhupada for our society. And that is how one will go back to Godhead. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he established that principle. Like about 100 years ago, in Bengal, the situation was very, very bad. Even today, you can see, when you go to the villages of Bengal, you will see that there are groups of people, those who are dressed up like, those who have tilak in the forehead, and they are wearing to kanthi mala, and they are wearing saffron even. But at the same time, you'll see that he has a woman who is also wearing saffron. So that's what is going on. Like Mahaprabhu, who was so strict that Mahaprabhu banished Chota Haridas, because he just had some polluting thoughts in his mind, contaminating thoughts in his mind when he was begging some rice from a woman. And Mahaprabhu could sense it when he took the prasad, and Mahaprabhu didn't want to see his face. And this Chota Haridas, he waited for 1 year. Actually, all the devotees went to Mahaprabhu and begged that, please forgive him. It was just a minor mistake. It's only a small little mistake. So please forgive him. And Mahaprabhu got so angry, he said that, well, if you all want to stay with him, then you stay with him. I'll leave. I will leave Jagannath Puri. I'll go over. I'll go to Tota Gopinath. So, you know, I'll go to Alarnath. That's what Mahaprabhu said. And then everyone got very afraid. And Mahaprabhu meant it. If they insisted on Mahaprabhu's accepting her Chota Haridas, then Mahaprabhu would have left. So they did not ask Mahaprabhu again. And Chota Haridas wait, and they told Chota Haridas, well, Mahaprabhu got very angry, so you just wait, and someday Mahaprabhu's anger will subside. And Chota Haridas kept on waiting. And he waited for 1 year, but still Mahaprabhu's mind did not change. And then one day, one early morning, Chota Haridas left Jagannath Puri, and he walked straight to Allahabad, Prayag, in the confluence of Ganga, Jamuna and Saraswati, and he drowned himself there. And then somebody came from Allahabad. No one knew where Chota Haridas went. One morning they saw that Chota Haridas was missing, and no one knew where he went. Then somebody came from Allahabad and told them that how some Vaishnav drowned himself in Allahabad. And then they got to know that it's actually Chota Haridas. Oh, and before that, Chota Haridas, they used to sing. They used to hear that Chota Haridas is singing. And they could figure out that Chota Haridas became, they thought that Chota Haridas became a ghost. And in a ghost body, he was singing. But then when this man came and told the news, then they found out that Chota Haridas actually got a Gandharva body. He left his body there, and he got the body of a Gandharva. And in this Gandharva body, he used to come and sing for Lord Chaitanya. And when they told that to Mahaprabhu, Mahaprabhu said, yes, that's good. When somebody falls down like that, he should give up his body in Triveni. That's the only way he can be rescued. Mahaprabhu was so strict, very, very strict. Then how can we think that Mahaprabhu is going to accept the people, those who are associating with women, falling down with illicit sex, and so and so forth. So devotees have to be very, very strict, especially the devotees in the renounced order. They have to be very strict. Yes, one can accept household order of life and maintain his grihastha life. That is all right. But for the people, those who have accepted sannyas, they have to be very, very strict, especially in this movement. Otherwise, our society also will become sahajiyas. If we do not become very strict about following the regulative principles, that's why Prabhupada was so strict. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so strict. And if we want to see that our movement spreads very effectively all over the world and preaches the cult of Krishna consciousness for 10,000 years in future to deliver the conditioned living entities of this age of Kali, then we must be very strict about seeing that these four regulative principles are followed by everybody in our society. Obviously, we do not want that such a wonderful society should be destroyed. Prabhupada worked so hard. At the age of 70, he went to America and he didn't have any money, any shelter. He didn't have anything to depend on. And in the New York City winter, Prabhupada was all alone without any shelter practically, no food to eat. And thus Prabhupada struggled to establish this movement of Krishna consciousness. So how can we ever think that this movement, it does not really matter if this movement goes to hell. This movement is the only hope for the world, and we have to become very, very strict about seeing that this principle of the movements remain intact, and that's how only this movement will remain effective. Otherwise, it may become like a Christian church. Like that's what also happened in Christian. I was reading the other day the history of Christianity. In the early days, the Christians were very strict actually. They would not, especially the monks, they were very strict. They were living in the deserts. And especially the Egyptian monks, the Syrian monks, and the Irish monks were very, very strict. And they would live in the desert, live in a mountain cave. The Syrian monks, they used to live high up on a valley, and that was 500 feet high. And the only way one could go there was by climbing a rope. Yeah, one had to climb a rope to reach that plateau. And they used to live there. No one was allowed to, no unwanted element was allowed to go in there. They were so strict with themselves. And in the total seclusion, they would live, leading a very, very strict life. Then also, Saint Benedict, he was even more strict. He was living in a cave where the food was just lowered down with a rope, and he was living all by himself. But then when they systematized the policy, we can see that those days there was no question of drinking alcohol for the spiritualists. But then, actually it was Benedict actually who wrote the policy, and he made the policy like drinking was allowed. I couldn't understand how he could allow that. Of course, he was justifying that one can take drinks because otherwise it don't have a social recognition. People will not accept it socially. People will not come to Christianity if they were not allowed to drink. But it should be, one should drink in moderation. One should not drink to get drunk. Then it was, food can be cooked twice a day. That is, if somebody missed one meal, so that he can get another meal, he can have some food. Say, if somebody was out and did not come back in time for the noontime meal, then he can get something to eat in the evening. I can see that he was actually making it possible for, in a broader sense, to be practiced. But people started to indulge. They started to say, well, one can drink. one can eat as much as one wants. And so then very soon the monks became very fat. I mean, medieval monks, I mean, they're actually the comic figures, actually, with big, big bodied people, those who are just eating and drinking and doing all kinds of nonsense. And then the deviation started, and it became so much deviated that the popes were having illicit children. And the nuns were getting pregnant, left everywhere. Everyone was those monks were indulging in illicit sex. Naturally, when you eat too much, and when one eats too much and when one drinks wine and takes meat, then he must fall, he's bound to fall down at illicit sex. Because the body cannot become austere in that sense. That's why it is so important that the spiritualist maintain an austere life, who has to be very strict with himself, that we should not allow our body to run for enjoyment. And this sense of enjoyment begins with eating. When we eat in excess and eat all kinds of garbage, especially meat and such non-vegetarian food, and when one drinks, then naturally the body becomes totally uncontrollable. So those who are aspiring for spiritual life must be very strict with their body's demands. Body will always tell us that let's go and do this, let's go and do that. But we must always chastise the body and say, try to keep it under control. And that's why it is very, very important for a sadhu to follow the four regulative principles. And that is our only hope, actually. Like, as long as our society maintains the four regulative principles and chants the prescribed number of rounds, then automatically we will have faith in the scriptures and we will follow it very strictly. Actually, everything is there in Prabhupada's books. Everything is there. We don't have to go out anywhere and look for something else. But the question is how strictly we are going to follow them. If we don't follow, then what is the use? If we don't follow, then we'll fall. Either we can, in spiritual life, there is no stagnation. It is another very nice thing to consider. Either we go up or we go down. Because the living entity is a dynamic element. Living entity is dynamic. Living entity always moves, has to move. Right? Now, if you are not going upwards, then which way will you move? You'll naturally move downwards, right? Because there is no way of going sidewise. If you go sidewise, then automatically again, you will go backwards. So, it is very important that we remain fixed up in our spiritual life. After all, we must be thoughtful. We must always think why we came here. Why we came here? Did we come here because of anything material, for any material gain? Actually, we could have had those material enjoyments staying at home. Especially in the Western countries, everybody has enough access to material enjoyment. Everybody can have a nice, comfortable life. Everybody can have everything practically, materially, whatever he wants. So we must consider, why did we come to the movement? We came for our spiritual life. And since we have come here for our spiritual life, let us become fixed up on spiritual life. So that is what we have to always remind ourselves. Actually, mind is very tricky. Mind always tries to trick us and take us to the material enjoyment. But we must always, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that we must hit the mind every morning with a shoe 100 times. And at night, before going to bed, we must hit the mind again 100 times with a broom. Like in the morning, we must beat the mind with a shoe and make the mind realize that don't deviate, don't think of sense gratification, don't think of anything else but Krishna consciousness. And in the course of day, if mind has accumulated some dirt, then we must hit the mind with a broom so that the mind gets freed from those dust. So that is what we should follow, we should practice every day. We should always remind ourselves that do not deviate, do not deviate, do not deviate. And Maya actually is very strong. Maybe we are sincerely thinking that we should not deviate. But if we give Maya some chance, if we allow Maya to enter by any means, then Maya will take over. That is the business of Maya. Maya enters, it is like a small needle. And then Maya enters like a needle and then comes out like a plow. So that is what Maya does. So we should not allow Maya to enter in our heart by any chance. And how does Maya enter? Who knows how Maya enters into our hearts? Yeah. Yes, what kind of desires? Right, and what are the material desires? Material desires are dhanam, janam and sundarin. Desire for wealth, desire for name and fame, and desire for enjoying sex life. That is how Maya enters. So we should not allow ourselves like that to indulge in these activities at all. We must understand that we have come here to become renounced. We haven't come here to accumulate money. We must understand that we have come here not to become famous, but we have come here to become a humble servant of Lord Chaitanya. And we have come here not to indulge in sex life, but we have come here to become free from sex desire. So that is very, very important for the devotees. And if we do follow, that's why Mahaprabhu said, Nadhanam na janam na sundarim kavitangva jagadisha kamaye. Mama janmuni janmuni share bhavatad bhakti rahaitukitvai. Life after life, I simply want to serve your lotus feet. And I do not want wealth and opulence. I do not want name and fame. And I do not want the association of the opposite sex. I couldn't touch the two other points. Actually, they have already been covered in a way. The other two sections of the purport is that it's very important that we follow the disciplic succession. This knowledge is actually transcendental knowledge. It is spiritual knowledge. Now, can the spiritual knowledge, can you understand the spiritual subject matter with our material mind? Is it possible? Is it possible to see with your hands? Can you see with your hands? Why not? Because seeing hand is able to perform lesser degree of activities, whereas seeing is of a higher degree, right? Seeing is more subtle than what your hand can do. Hand can touch, right? Touch is grosser than seeing, right? So grosser elements cannot experience the subtler elements, but the subtle can experience the gross, right? You can touch the food with your eyes, isn't it? But you cannot see with your hands, but you can feel with your eyes. Right? So, I was trying to point it out because we are in a grosser level. Our material senses are grosser. Right? Whereas spiritual subject is higher. Right? So lower cannot reach the higher region. So that's why with our mind, with our intelligence, we cannot approach the spiritual nature. So when you if we want to understand the spiritual subject, then it has to come down from that higher level. And it comes down from the higher level to our level. How? How does spiritual knowledge come down from the higher level to the level we are in? Huh? Through disciplic succession. Very good. Yes. Through the disciplic succession. So that's why if we want to understand the transcendental subject matter, then we have to take shelter of the disciplic succession. And now one may question that I do not want to accept authority. That is a big problem actually with many, many devotees. They do not want to accept authority. Only when they are smashed on the head, then they accept. Right? If they are forced, then only they accept. I am not talking about all, but many. But that acceptance should be spontaneous. We must think that we have come here for spiritual knowledge. And I can get the knowledge from someone who has it. So let us be surrendered to their authority. Because here is a man who knows the subject matter, who knows how one can get that knowledge. So if we become surrendered to him, then we also will be able to get that knowledge. So that is the meaning of being surrendered to the authority. And of course, at the same time, authority also should not think, oh, here is a new bhakta, so let me just use him whatever I can use him for. We shouldn't think that. It must be a two-way traffic. The junior devotees must surrender to the senior devotees, and senior devotees should be compassionate to the junior devotees. They must feel compassion that here is a devotee who has come to make advancement in spiritual life, so let me help him out. That is very, very important. We should not exploit, but we must assist. Even the senior devotees must assist. And actually, that's why we address each other as Prabhus. We do not become the master. We become the servants. And everybody else becomes the master. Even a new bhakta becomes our master. Prabhu, my Lord. And when we develop that kind of attitude, then only it will be a very, very pleasant society. When a new devotee comes, we must feel that here is our responsibility to fix him up in spiritual life. Krishna sent a person, and now we must help him to become fixed up in devotional life. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to consider that Krishna has sent his disciples so that he can serve them helping them to advance in Krishna consciousness. He never thought that these disciples are his property. He felt that these disciples are my responsibility. The same thing with Prabhupada. Prabhupada once was crying in gratitude when he was telling that how his disciples have helped him spread Krishna consciousness. He was telling that how Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur sent them to assist him. And while he was expressing his gratitude to his disciples and also to his spiritual master, Prabhupada just began to cry. So spiritual life is actually a very beautiful life, and this International Society for Krishna Consciousness is a very beautiful society. And let us take full advantage of this society by making ourselves beautiful and making this society beautiful. This beauty is not the beauty of body, but this beauty is the body of spirit soul. Actually, everybody's spirit soul is beautiful, extremely beautiful. But we simply have to be situated in our spiritual identity. And more we become advanced in spiritual life, the more people will like us. This attraction is the attraction for beauty. That is, when we become more and more advanced in spiritual life, our spiritual form becomes revealed. That is so beautiful that everybody becomes attracted to that. Hare Krishna, thank you all very much. Does anybody have any question? Yeah.
I was in Augsburg and there were two very intelligent boys.
Uh-huh.
One asked this question: we understand that the soul actually has senses, intelligence and mind. At which time the spiritual mind becomes active and what happens to the material mind then?
Yeah. The mind, of course, everything that is here in the material nature must be there in the spiritual nature, right? But in the material nature, it is a diverted, perverted reflection, right? So, the function, in the spiritual nature also, the spirit soul has a mind, right? But the function of that mind is to simply think of Krishna, right? Krishna is telling, man mana bhava mad bhakto mad jaji mang namaskuru. So that is the function of the mind. And when that happens, then the material mind disappears, right? Because when the mind is situated in its perfect position, right, then, you know, it is the material nature is actually an unwanted growth, right? Like, for instance, we have our hand, right? And in the hand we get a boil, right? So the boil part of it swells up, right? And that swelling simply gives us pain, right? So the same way mind is an extension, you know, of our spiritual, the material mind is an extension of the spiritual mind. And that simply causes us pain like a boil, right? Now when you get rid of the boil, you do not get rid of your hand with that. You just get rid of the boil, and along with the boil, you also get rid of your pain, right? But your hand remains, right? So, the function of the mind in spiritual nature is to think of Krishna all the time. Man mana bhavo, with your mind you always think of me. And in spirit, when we are situated in the spiritual nature, then we automatically always think of Krishna. Yes, yes, right. Then he cannot think of matter. Even though he may see material things, right, but he sees in relationship with Krishna, right. He doesn't think of anything without connection to Krishna. Like, I think once I gave the example that how a devotee feels, how a devotee thinks about Krishna all the time. Like he sees a vulture flying in the sky. The vulture is flying in the sky. And he begins to jump in joy. And why? Because seeing the vultures flying in the sky, he figures out that there's some dead cow. Right? And then he thinks that with the skin of the dead cow, he'll make a mridanga and sing the glories of Krishna. So ultimately everything that way becomes connected to Krishna. A devotee doesn't think of anything but Krishna consciousness. But in Krishna consciousness. Isn't it? Any other question? Yeah. That is two sampradayas actually. One sampradaya is that Bhagavad Gita Right? The Bhagavad Gita came from Vivarshan and down, like through the Vivarshan, Manu, Ikshaku, etc. Right? So that is that parampara. But Srimad Bhagavatam, that parampara is Brahma, Narada, etc. So we put more emphasis on Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhagavad Gita is actually the process of karma yoga. Bhagavad Gita is not the final point. It is only the preliminary stage. Prabhupada used to say Bhagavad Gita is like abitur, right? And Srimad Bhagavatam is the diploma, right? And Chaitanya Charitamrita is the PhD. So Bhagavad Gita is the initial understanding, and that's what you see. Srimad Bhagavatam continues from Bhagavad Gita. What is the last instruction of Bhagavad Gita? What is the last instruction of Krishna in Bhagavad Gita? Sarvadharman Parityajya. Right? And what is the first shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam? Not Janmadarsha Jato. Janmadarsha Jato is the invocation. But the beginning of Bhagavatam is from the second shloka. And what is the second shloka of Srimad Bhagavatam? Who knows? Dharma prajjito koitabo atra parama nirmatsaranam satam. So do you see a link? Right? One is saying sarvadharman parityajya, and the other is saying dharma prajjito koitabo atra. Right? So this way you can see that where Bhagavad Gita ends, Srimad Bhagavatam begins. So actually our line, the main thing that we follow is Srimad Bhagavatam. So that is that parampara. Is that clear? Yes, you have. You see, in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is telling that tad gatvana nivartante tad dhamo paramam mamo. Once somebody has gone back to Godhead, he doesn't fall down, right? So, you see, developing one's spiritual body and going back to Godhead is the same thing, right? So, from that we have to understand that when one develops a spiritual body and is situated in loving relationship with Krishna, he doesn't fall down. And Prabhupada also explained about Bharat Maharaj's incidents, that Bharat Maharaj fell down although he was in the bhava stage. Bharat Maharaj was experiencing ecstasy, but still he fell down from that. So Prabhupada said, even from bhava stage, one may fall down. But beyond bhava, what? What stage is there beyond bhava? Prema. So from prema stage, one doesn't fall down. And developing spiritual body is in the spiritual, in the prema stage. When you develop your spiritual body, then with your spiritual body, you begin to love Krishna. So from that stage, one doesn't fall down. So we have to understand that it's very difficult. At the same time, we also must be very careful. We should never think that we are not going to fall down. We all must think that we may fall down at any moment. Although theoretically we may feel that, first of all, we have not developed our spiritual body. I don't know about others, but at least I didn't develop my spiritual body. So we have to be very, very careful. I mean, I have to be very careful that I do not fall down. Spiritual life means being very, very careful. We must not ever think that now I have got Krishna. Because actually, more we make advancement, the more we realize how much we haven't got Krishna. Like we see, the pure devotees of Krishna, did we ever hear them saying, I have got Krishna? On the other hand, we see that how much they feel that they haven't got Krishna. Like Mahaprabhu himself, when he was displaying the mood of a devotee, he was always crying, Kaha jao, kaha pao, Brajendra Nandan bina phate mor mon. So where shall I get Krishna? Where shall I get Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj? Without Krishna, my heart is breaking. So that is the mood of a devotee. And when you develop that kind of love for Krishna, then there is no chance of falling down. But we must understand that we are in a very, very dangerous situation. We are in the middle of Maya. We are in a material nature. Material nature is the kingdom of Maya. So we are in the kingdom of Maya, and here in the kingdom of Maya, we are trying to fight against Maya as a soldier of Krishna. So Maya is actually very, very tricky with us. Maya is also trying to kill us. That is, Maya is also trying to kill our Krishna consciousness. Can you imagine if you are fighting in the beyond the enemy line? Say there is a war between, say, Germany and France. Right? Now, if you are fighting from Germany, then it is not so difficult. But if you are a paratrooper and you have been dropped in the French land, and then in that enemy country you are fighting, it's so dangerous and so difficult. So our position is like that. We are in the enemy country. We are in the land of Maya, and here we are fighting for Krishna. But our advantage is we are fighting for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if we fight well, then nothing can defeat us. If we remain faithful to our Lord and Master, then no one can defeat us, even Maya. Then Maya becomes subordinate, because Maya is, after all, Maya also is Krishna's maid servant. Any other question? Yeah.
What should be the shoe and what should be the groom's treatment? I once saw a devotee doing it.
Good. If he can do it literally, then I'm sure he can do it theoretically also. Good. There's no harm in that. Actually, maybe it is better, because we are so gross, unless we pick up a shoe and start literally beating us, we do not really feel what it actually means. Yeah, what is the other technical question? Underneath. Yeah. Yeah. Saraswati, yeah.
And is it actually water?
Yeah, the river is there. The river is there. Actual water. But the thing is that it's gone underground. Any other question? Last question? Okay, thank you all very much. And so today I am finally leaving for India. Thank you all very much for being so kind to me, and I really appreciated your association, and I'll try to come back again soon, because I personally feel very closely connected to this zone, especially this country, Germany. And because I can see that this is actually a wonderful place for Krishna consciousness. The devotees are wonderful. And when the devotees are so wonderful, then I'm sure the karmis also, when they become devotees, must be very wonderful. Even the karmis must be wonderful also. It's only a matter of preaching to them and bringing them into our folds. That's what is needed. And So thank you all once again. And I thought of one thing, I want to clarify one point, that in the course of my lecture, sometimes I am a little too harsh towards the women, but this I am talking about the general distinction, but the devotees in the movement, they are not like any other women. We have to understand that they are spirit souls. They are engaged in serving Krishna. They are Krishna's maid servants. And that's why we address to them as mothers. And everyone is naturally respectful towards his mother. So that is our mood, that should be our mood in our Krishna conscious life, that we must look at every female member of our society as the mother, and female member of the society also look at every male member of the society as their child, and then only we can have a harmonious platform for rendering devotional service. It is that's what Prabhupada wanted, and let's be a true follower of Prabhupada by being totally situated in the spiritual platform. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.